Kylie Black has already had end-of-life conversations with doctors. The 31-year-old suffers from Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, EDS, a genetic connective tissue disorder that is progressive and incurable. But Black does not want to die, and she does not want doctors suggesting death as an option to her, especially in her darkest day. She says, I personally have seen over 20 specialists through my local district health board. If I was asked to consider my options as things progress, by even a handful of these, I would certainly feel very pressured to consider euthanasia. Kylie, good morning.
Good morning, Rachel.
You're very brave, I think, coming out with this story, considering your circumstances. Patently, you feel strongly about it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I do. Look, there's been not a lot of conversation around this subject at all in regards to the bill. Few months. I've talked with many people about the bill and have been actually surprised at how many have not been aware that the bill is not just about end-stage terminal disease, but also about those with remedial medical conditions that cause suffering.
Mm-hmm.
People are just like, wait, what? No? Because a lot of the conversation has been around terminal illness. But a lot of the conversation around this bill is also around those with irremediable medical conditions and hugely affects our disability community. Many with disability have irremediable medical conditions.
Let me just find out a little more about EDS.
Yep.
What is your prognosis as you understand it?
I don't look at prognosis because I don't want to leave. I don't want to keep myself in that kind of time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been given 5 to 7 years before, and I have been told if I was to have acute dislocation, it could be an hour tomorrow, anytime.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
How would you tell us, describe, what gives you your desire to, it's an individual thing. Some people would throw in the towel, some people would give up the ghost. What is it about you that makes you want to keep living, considering what might lie in the future?
Yeah, I'm facing those realities today. My internal organs, I've spent the last 2 days at in hospital talking about the very realities. All my internal organs are stretching and degrading, and all of my joints are subluxing and dislocate. And so I face those very real struggles every day,
Yeah.
But it's interesting you make that comment, We talk about it being an individual choice. But choices are made in context. And these contexts often differ with societal and economic status.
Yep.
And whether someone is marginalised by poverty or is elderly or is disabled, we don't all have access to the same ideology of choice. Disabled people have been fighting stigma, prejudice, financial hardship, and have higher unemployment rates and participate less in opportunities. Some people be more vulnerable to these external circumstantial pressures.
Mm-hmm.
Puts me further at risk. So how is that choice?
So if you were confronted by someone from the medical fraternity who said who made what you would consider to be a negative comment with regard to this bill, if it were in place, how would it affect you, do you think?
I don't know. But I know that we have to have much wider and much larger conversations about it.
Okay. I've got a saying, inch by inch, step by step, or step by step, inch by inch. You might call it thin end of the wedge or whatever, but I know that you're concerned about this bill on that basis.
Mm. Well, another point that people might make is the bill won't make any difference to people like me who want to live because it's about personal choice. However, we've already seen overseas in Oregon
mm-hmm.
that 22% of patients listed fear of inadequate pain control as end-of-life concern. The main reason put down was actually about loss of autonomy and dignity. So it's not overwhelming pain control that is causing people to seek euthanasia, not having access to pain control.
Right. So you've made mention in the interview that was done with you of the unintended consequences of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see them as?
Well, one of the ones I have, you know, is around the disability sector, but here's the one as well. You know, patients would need to talk with at the moment with their doctors about euthanasia, but it doesn't make comment on whether doctors are able to talk with patients about it. So what does it look like if I, as a young person with an irremediable medical condition, walks into a doctor and says, I'm suicidal, I'm suffering, I want euthanasia. But equally at the same time, someone without a health condition walks in and says the same thing. I know that there's a lot of pushback about having these conversations side on side. I don't see it quite as black and white as that, because I, as a young person, have faced times of suicide in the past. A lot of the disability community have. So do we get support for suicide, or do we get support for euthanasia? Because doctors aren't allowed to dissuade you from euthanasia.
Mm.
So I think there's some questions there. There's a large population of my incredible disabled friends in the disability community who would not be alive today if the bill had been legalised earlier. And yet, you know, we all have times of struggle. We all have hard moments. Disability does not reduce that, but people can, with the right supports, get through. I think the other thing is that we actually need to make sure that people are having full access to the support that enable them to live, because it's often those pressures of not having the right care, of feeling like a burden on family, that push people towards that euthanasia feeling, the need to make euthanasia.
A few years ago, I had a listener who was suffering from MS.
Mm.
She rang me on numerous occasions over a period of years.
Mm.
And one day she told me that she was going to end it, and she would know when it was going to happen, because she was not going to go through the deterioration. And one day I got word that she had done it. She was young. She was vibrant. We had some wonderful conversations, but she did it. What do you say to those who have the polar view to you, the opposite view to you, that they want the right to do it?
I say that we need to have a conversation about the wider implications before we're having a clear conversation on end of life, the right to take end of life, because yes, I understand that people want that right, but there's a big subset of people in the middle of that who are very vulnerable to the risk of being in a situation that they're not going to be able to control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, overseas too. So one of the girls that I'm aware of, she had her doctors talk to her about, you know, seeking out euthanasia options overseas, and had euthanasia been legal in New Zealand, she would have taken that. And yet now she's come through the grief. She's come through the struggle, and she's able to live actually a much, she's got quality, and she's able to find life within that. I understand that not all circumstances allow that or end in that, but I think that we have to have a much bigger conversation about the risk of the disability community. I mean, we've been fighting for years for equality, and so the bill as it stands tells people that you're better off to be dead than disabled, essentially. And we have an incredible disability community who are fighting for equal equality.
Let me conclude by saying I do believe you're very brave. I do believe you've got stamina. You've got something that I admire greatly. And I wish you well in your campaign, if I can call it that.
Thank you.
And the very best of everything.
Thank you. And yeah, just let me say that everyone deserves and needs the chance to access the supports that enable you to live well. Yeah.
Indeed.